Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could join us today. Parents, how are you doing? No, really, how are you? Parenting can be tough, even in the best of times, and during this global pandemic that is still going on after nearly 2 years, well, it only makes the job much more difficult. So this hour, I am checking in with parents across Minnesota. I'll talk with a children's mental health expert and a Minnesota mom who hosts a podcast about parenting. We'll talk about the challenges of parenting during the pandemic and what we can do to help our children and ourselves with mental health. And I definitely want to hear from you as well. If you are a parent or a caregiver, give us a call. I want to know how you're doing. What's going on in your home? What's going on with your child? What are your challenges and what's working for you? What advice do you need? You can call us at these numbers. It's 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can tweet me at Angela Davis MPR. Let's bring in our guest this hour. We have with us Brandon Jones, and Brandon is a therapist as well as the executive director of Minnesota's Association for Children's Mental Health. Good morning to you, Brandon, and welcome back to the program.
Good morning. I'm glad to be back. It's good to be here.
Thank you for making time for us. And we also have on the line Aaron Erickson. Aaron is a maternal child health specialist as well as a nurse practitioner. And she also co-hosts the podcast Mom Enough. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here with you and Brandon today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the conversation. I'm a parent, you're both parents, so I just want to begin by asking just, you know, how are you doing? Aaron, I'll start with you. How are things going?
Oh, that's sometimes a loaded question, but I think overall I'm doing quite well.
It's just us, Aaron. It's just us and a few friends. So, like, you know.
That's so true.
Today, how are you?
Yeah. No, I'm doing really well today. I'm very happy to be here. And I think this is such an important topic. And, you know, we've been through a lot since this pandemic started nearly 2 years ago. And I think for me and for my family, it's really just been a day-by-day approach to this, because some days are harder than others. And, you know, some days something's canceled or we're not able to do something, and that can be a disappointment. And other days we find new and creative ways to have fun and make the most of this situation. So, you know, I think we're doing pretty well.
Good. I know. I think sometimes, you know, parents, particularly parents of young kids. And how old are your children, Aaron?
Yeah, I have three children. They're 15, 17, and almost 18.
Okay. Parents can be a little bit competitive, but I think during the pandemic, we've learned to lean on each other a little bit more. Have you seen that?
Oh, absolutely. And I know for my kind of, I call them my phone friends, or those moms or friends who you can call at any point. And I really find that we're talking a lot more and sharing our experiences. And I think even opening up to each other about some of the deeper challenges with our children or for ourselves, like mental health struggles during the pandemic, challenges our kids are having with kind of the changing dynamics of school. So I think those connections are even more important now than ever.
And Brandon, I know your children are younger. How old are your kids?
Yes, I have a 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-month-year-old. So adjusting to a new little one in the home.
Wow. And so how are you today?
I'm doing good. I actually had to get away from my kids to do our interview today, which I think is a good thing. But I'm doing well. It's good to have good co-parenting, my partner, my wife, and being able to lean on one another when we can. So that gives us space and grace to parent in a very effective way.
You used the phrase, I had to get away from my kids. I think a lot of us have used that a lot in the last 2 years.
That's realistic.
But that's okay. We need to do that sometimes. We need to give each other space.
Absolutely.
Right. And Aaron, so with teenagers, they're in this phase where, you know, socializing is so important, socializing with their peers especially. So how have they been affected by the pandemic? What have you seen?
Oh, yeah. I think it's really been hard for them in so many ways. You know, this is like the normal developmental task of teenagers is to individuate, to go off and be independent. And in so many ways, a lot of those normal things they would be doing to do that have been interrupted. So, you know, maybe they haven't been able to get together with larger groups of people, or depending on, you know, their friends, some friends have, you know, families where they have a loved one who has a condition that maybe puts them at greater risk. So they might not be able to see those friends very often. Now, one thing I've noticed is that they've gotten pretty creative about staying connected, and social media has actually been really helpful for that. I'm not like the biggest social media fan because there's definitely the downsides of that. But I think they've really found ways to stay connected with their friends. But I know there have been times where they felt lonely or isolated, and that's been really hard for them.
Mm. And Brandon, you know, we focus so much, I feel like, in the last 2 years on what's been happening in schools with distance learning with children and how they've been impacted. But what are you seeing with parents and how, you know, they're coping with, you know, watching their children struggle while having their own struggles, you know, with work or with other family members or with health issues?
Absolutely. What I've noticed in my conversations with parents has been this difficulty to juggle all the things that are going on. There's a level of angst with a lot of parents. A lot of parents are on edge. They don't know if there's, you know, their children's school is going to be temporarily shut down due to quarantines and things of that nature. So there's a level of anxiety that has been risen throughout this time. And then also figuring out ways to engage with their children during these times, whether they're doing distance learning or they're just trying to socialize with their friends, just attempting to make sure that everyone's being safe is a struggle for parents as we move through the pandemic.
And a lot of people are sort of, you know, sandwiched kind of in because as a parent, you've got these young people that you're caring for, but then you're also taking care of maybe your older parents. Have you heard a lot about that as well?
Oh, absolutely. There are people who are taking care of various different vulnerable adults that may be in their lives, pets, and even other, you know, siblings and things of that nature. So there's a lot of caretaking that's going on, which is important for parents to make sure they find space for themselves and their own well-being, because trying to juggle it all can be very difficult.
Aaron, what are you talking about on the Mom Enough podcast?
Oh, boy. Well, we cover everything from keeping the spark in your marriage to, you know, talking to teens about sex and consent to dealing with the terrible twos, or I think actually threes are maybe a little harder. But we talk about everything from pregnancy and beyond. And so it's right now, actually, we recently, and it's going to be coming out soon, we did an episode on social media, and I think that's something that's on a lot of parents' minds these days, and really holding space for the great things, like I mentioned before, with my kids being able to connect, but also some of the challenges that come with our kind of very social lives these days, and how people edit their lives and show that on social media. And I think that has a huge effect both on young people, but also on moms. I know there's always that feeling when you see the other family, they're doing something really amazing, and you're all home in your sweatpants just trying to get through the day. And I think it can create a lot of stress. So that's definitely something that we've been talking about more lately.
The name of your podcast, Mom Enough. Now, to me, that implies like at some point you've just done all that you can do. What can be expected of you? But what is that name of your podcast? What does that mean? Is it about expectations we place on ourselves?
Well, it's about that and more even. You know, that really comes from the early work on kind of the good enough mother. And what do you need to do to have healthy, happy kids who are able to contribute to their community? And, you know, I think this concept of mom enough, there's sort of this mom too much. And we see a lot of this today. You know, for so many of us, we have anxieties or stress that sort of lead us to be more helicopter parents or you know, overly involved in our kids, or even enabling them, not giving them opportunities to kind of learn something for themselves. And I've always said, you know, our job as a parent is to work ourselves out of a job, is to have our kids be successful in to the most extent that they can. Of course, we all have children with different needs. Some of us have children whose needs may mean that, you know, for them, that independence is going to look different. But on the other side, that mom too little, I mean, we can all, I'm sure, relate to this. We've had those times where we're disengaged, or, you know, maybe we've had a really stressful situation at work and we're just not as present for our kids, or we're caught up in our own stuff. And I think it's really this balance of, you know, those times where you're maybe not mom enough or dad enough or parent enough, or you're parent too much, mom, dad too much. And it's really finding that balance. And I've always kind of believed in this idea of sum total parenting. You know, it's not about that moment where maybe you had a really stressful day and you were irritated, or maybe you raised your voice at your child. It wasn't your best parenting. But most of the time you're loving and responsive and tending to your child's cues and needs. You know, it's really about the balance of that whole picture of your parenting. And I think that's really what Mom Enough is about, is supporting parents, even in those times when you're not doing your best parenting, and knowing that you can keep learning and you can find new ways to do it. And it's really not about being perfect. It's about being mom enough.
Right. And Brandon, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, I think that was great. I think when you find that balance, being honest about it as well is a huge factor. I think a lot of parents get to the place where they're almost burnt out, and then they just kind of keep toughing through because, you know, a lot of times they don't have the support that they need for relief when it comes to parenting, and they just keep pushing forward. And I think one thing that we have to do is just recognize that we've hit our limit and we need a break, and trying to find those supports if we can is very, very important so that we can recharge and be enough as a parent to just keep going.
And how have you seen like heightened levels of anxiety and stress in parents, you know, affect how they interact with their children?
Oh, absolutely. People who are very short, you know, a lot of yelling, a lot of frustration. Sometimes parents will even isolate themselves from their children, where they, you know, they just put headphones on and disappear, or, you know, they need to go sit in a car or things of that nature, just because they need to get away from all the demands that children have on them. And that can be frustrating. That can be frustrating for the parent because you don't want to feel like you're a bad parent. And it can also be frustrating for the children because they're wondering, you know, why is my mom or dad or caregiver, you know, disconnecting from me without, you know, much conversation on what's actually happening. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's important that parents find healthy ways to disconnect if they need to, and be able to communicate that back to the children so they understand why they need their space.
But it's okay, right, to take time for yourself or to take a time out. You know, you hear a lot of, you know, parents of really young kids, like babies and toddlers, talk about, you know, going into the bathroom and locking the door, or going into their bedroom and just taking a time out. We should give ourselves permission to do that.
Absolutely, we should. And we should also plan for it, too. It's okay to not just be responsive when things happen and you're in those heightened states, but also be a little bit more proactive and find your spots where you can take that time out, because you deserve that break and you need it. And if you are fortunate enough to have a co-parent with you or another caregiver, to lean on them and also negotiate with them so you have an opportunity to take that break. I think one thing that we do as parents is we get very, very reactionary, and we wait for things to just kind of get to that point and that limit where we can't do anymore, and then we get even more frustrated because we don't feel like we have a relief. So I think sometimes we could take a little bit more proactive approaches to make sure that we're maintaining our well-being as we go throughout our day.
If you're joining us, we're talking about parenting during the pandemic, and I want to hear from our listeners. We want to take your phone calls if you're a parent or a caregiver to a child. How are you doing? What is going on with your child or your teenager? What are your challenges, and what advice do you need? We're talking with two guests who can offer some advice. We have Brandon Jones, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health, as well as a therapist, and also Erin Erickson, who is a nurse practitioner and a maternal child health specialist, and she co-hosts the podcast Mom Enough. Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. In the introduction, I talked about the fact that we're you know, we're in winter break now. There are no classes at school, so there's going to be a lot of family time over the next couple of weeks. And so, Brandon, let's talk about like the huge toll that the pandemic has had on the mental health of the children and teenagers in our lives. What are you seeing? Like, what kind of behaviors are you seeing in children and young people right now?
Yeah, one of the main things I've seen is a lot of anger that's been just revved up, and you know, I want to say part of it's due to the pandemic. Part of it's due to just children not having the outlets that they normally have. And I think also part of it's due to just socialization changing. There is a lot more engagement via screens and not in person. And I think what has happened is we've been impacted by that. So when we do get into social settings with one another, people are a little bit more short. But I've seen a lot of anger, a lot of anxiety increase for young children. We're starting to see behaviors rev up. You know, children doing things that we don't want them to do. They may be a little bit more sneaky during these times and things of that nature. But those are the main two things that I've noticed is high levels of anxiety and high levels of aggression.
In the children.
In the children, yes.
In the children. Correct. And I've heard talk also about regression, like with younger kids kind of going back to their mm-hmm. behavior when they were far younger, and even with like adolescent kids sort of regressing or just, you know, falling back in maturity.
Yeah. Yep, I've seen a little bit of that. I've even seen that in my own home. My five-year-old, when we brought our new baby home, she's regressed a little bit. She's she's losing her, you know, being the youngest in the home type of thing. And she's fallen into, you know, some behaviors that we haven't seen in 2 or 3 years. And I think part of that's just due to the adjustment in the home and her not wanting to be left behind and wanted to still be cared for like she normally does, but also recognizing there's a new child home. And I think that that's something that many kids go through. And in the pandemic, we have huge adjustments, right? You can't just go outside and play with your friends like you normally would without, you know, your parents vetting what's going on in someone else's home. You know, we're not doing sports like we normally would or other activities. So there's these huge social adjustments that are taking place for many children, and they don't always know how to process those things. And what happens is regression can take place.
Mm. And Aaron, what about you? Let's talk about the behavior you're seeing or you're hearing about in children, how it's changed since the pandemic started.
Oh, yeah. I'm hearing from a lot of parents that they're just experiencing a lot of stress related to these changes in their kids. Now, I have a lot of connections with parents who have adolescents. And I think just seeing more, you know, talking back or maybe even just some signs of depression that include irritability, some more conflict in the home. And I think it's really hard for parents and for teens because nobody wants to feel like that. And I think it's really important for families to, you know, seek out support for that. I also will say a lot of the moms I talk to through Mom Enough are, you know, they're just really feeling overwhelmed about some of what their kids are experiencing because they want their kids to have a normal childhood. Mm-hmm. And for so many kids right now, there's limitations to what they can do. And things are constantly changing. You know, maybe you worked for weeks at school on a performance and then it was canceled because of COVID and, you know, a rise in cases at the school. I know a lot of the moms that I talk to just talk about that balance of how do you find time for yourself when you're all home and your kids need you and maybe your kids need you a little bit more than they did before because they're also dealing with the stress of this. So we're all kind of in the same container of this challenging time, and we all have unique needs. And then you add to that these kind of, I would say, very normal responses to this, the pandemic, you know, normal behavioral changes. But it does add to the struggle for everyone.
We're talking about parenting during the pandemic, and I want to hear from our listeners. Have you noticed changes in the behavior of your children over the last 2 years? And do you need some advice on what to do or how you can help? And how are you doing? Are you finding the support that you need? What's going on with your child and with you? What are your challenges? Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And you can also tweet me at Angela Davis, MPR. I'm going to bring in some of the questions I'm seeing now on Twitter. Here's a question from Kate or a story from Kate. She writes, Angela, my 13-year-old hides her face behind her mask, wears it in social situations, even when it's appropriate to have it off. She's always been shy, and now she is antisocial. So, Brandon and Aaron, let's talk about wearing face masks, because the kids who are going to school are, you know, required to have these masks on, and in social situations with their families, they're still wearing masks. What has that done, do you think, to how children are behaving or what they think about the world around them, Brandon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes them more cautious. I think pre-pandemic, one of the things I would see with a lot of adolescents is hoodies. They'll wear hoodies on and they'll pull them real tight so they, you know, cover as much of their face as they can. I think masks just have added another layer or accessory to being able to kind of shield yourself from social situations. And it's acceptable, and it will be for quite some time, even when it's not necessarily required. And I think, you know, a lot of times for youth who are in those situations and want to kind of protect themselves, they need to feel like they can be comfortable in social settings, and they need to be encouraged, but not forced. And sometimes you have to pace yourself as a parent, take things a little slow, because if you don't, you can, what ends up happening is you can force that child to even regress even further and get to a place where they don't want to engage socially at all. So, you know, social anxiety is a very tricky thing, and it takes some exposure, but it also takes a lot of patience.
And I think with the young kids, people have been concerned about, you know, with young children, toddlers, not being able to see, you know, faces and read facial expressions. There's been some concern about, will that affect their communication skills as they get older? What can you tell us about, you know, what, I mean, I guess, is there even time yet? Have we had enough time to have any research on that yet? Because again, all of this is new. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. There's a lot that we're going to learn in the next 5 years or so, based on the pandemic. I would go along with that hunch and say that it will affect our ability to read social cues, facial expressions, read people's emotions. I definitely think that can happen. You know, our masks cover a huge part of our face. We can't even tell if someone's smiling or not, or if they're grinning, or what's actually happening. And I think that will have an impact for children who are developing, because they can't read those things as well as they normally would. Which is going to impact our ability to socially interact. I mean, even for adults, I've been in some in-person meetings over the last few months, and we don't know if we should shake hands or what we should actually do. I think our socialization has taken a hit just in this short amount of time.
And Erin, Kate on Twitter writes about her 13-year-old who was always shy, but now with masks, she feels like she's really become antisocial. Are you hearing that from some parents, concerns about what mask has done to their children's behavior?
Yeah, I definitely have heard from parents as well about that. I think even just the adolescents that I've seen in clinic, some of them have actually been really happy when school was closed and they were going to school virtually. And I think it's important to acknowledge that for a lot of kids, going to school is really stressful. As Brandon mentioned, for those kids that have social anxiety, it can be really challenging. And so the mask or being at home can actually be kind of a source of comfort or feel better for those kids. So while many of us were frustrated about, you know, our kids were missing out on going to school, for a lot of kids, that was actually a positive thing. The challenge is then it does reinforce those kind of the behaviors that can make it harder for those kids when it's time to really fully reengage. And so I think, again, that's where, you know, seeking out professional help is really important. Now, my mom was a developmental psychologist, and so she's still a psychologist. But mm-hmm. I think growing up with that kind of in that kind of home where you have someone who's really positive about mental health, you know, we're pretty quick to reach out to professionals when we're struggling. In fact, one of my own children has struggled with social anxiety, mm-hmm. and mental health counseling can be so helpful in learning coping tools to be able to manage social situations. And so I don't think all is lost. I also think it's important right now to kind of be gentle with ourselves and our children and understand that things might be a little different for now, and we can continue to provide support and get that professional help. And then when things open up more and we're able to reengage, we can kind of continue that work. I don't think all is lost for now. So I guess I would give that mom a message of hope.
We're seeing folks on Twitter are writing and showing some love for those ECFE classes, early childhood and family education classes. I have one person who's writing, with a 2- and 4-year-old, Angela, and no family with kids of the same age, this has been really isolating. Thank God for ECFE classes. They're both learning how to socialize after missing almost a year of that development. And then also another person, Joy, writes on Twitter, parents across Minnesota can connect with licensed parent educators and other local parents through their school district's ECFE programs. All parents need and deserve support. Brandon, can you tell folks who are not familiar with the ECFE what those classes are and how they can be helpful?
Absolutely. And those classes, you know, typically those classes are when we have parent coaches or other professionals that will meet with you and your family either in the home or at an organization and even sometimes at school and just work on skills and development, how to engage with your child, things to watch out for, various different learning activities that can take place. And it's just like having a nice personal person who can help you develop as a parent, not to judge or shame you into, you know, what you aren't doing correctly, just giving you some tips and pointing out some things that you normally probably wouldn't even think of that you're actually doing to just point out how it's helping the development of your child. I'm a big proponent of ECFE education.
And I know even, you know, myself and through a lot of my friends, that's where a lot of folks found their, you know, their like friend groups and support groups that, you know, relationships that have lasted years from having children in that same age group. Erin, what can you say about ECFE classes and the experiences that, you know, parents that you've interacted with have said about it?
Oh, I've heard just resoundingly positive experiences from that program. And I think just like you, so many of these friends of mine or patients of mine or moms I've met through Mom Enough have said that was really just a huge lifesaver for them when they had younger children. And so many of them still have like reunions with their ECFE group. So I think ECFE is such an important program. And for parents of older kids, we still need to have those connections and support. So I think getting involved in community activities where when it's available, of course, the pandemic has made that a challenge. But, you know, whether it's through a faith organization or another community resource, finding those ways to connect with other parents is just essential to all of us kind of doing what I was talking about earlier, being Mom Enough. We all need support. And I think one thing that has really become clear to me during the pandemic with people kind of opening up about some of the struggles is that we're not alone in this. And I think that's one of the best parts of these opportunities for connections with other parents is to know that you're not alone in your experience.
Let's bring in some of our listeners now as we take some phone calls about the challenges of parenting during the pandemic and all the changes that our kids are going through right now. The number is 651-227-6000. You can give us a call and we'll talk about it. In St. Cloud right now, let's talk to Peggy. Good morning, Peggy. And what's going on with you right now?
Good morning. Hang on, I'm on. We'll get off that. I'm a second grade teacher in St. Cloud, and I'm also an assistant coach. So I work with, you know, both age groups of younger kids and then also with junior high and high school kids, too. And I was more responding to this idea of, like, depression in kids and, you know, picking up on facial expressions. And I guess what I'm seeing, you know, in the classroom is that, you know, kids are just interacting like they typically do and really enjoying each other's company. And we talk so much about, like, you know, look at that person's facial expression. How do you think they feel right now? And you can really see that even with a mask on. And I think that some of the issues with depression with kids is really being seen more at like the junior high and high school level where different families have different views about COVID. And some kids are just kind of living their life typically where other kids are just much more restricted. Yes. And they can see that on social media. You know, they're watching social media and they're seeing what their friends are up to. And maybe they're being a little left out of that.
Right.
Or they're nervous to join in. And kids of all ages, their primary concern is being with their peers.
Right.
And so I think that more than their experiences with their own family, it's more of a feeling of like, how do I get in touch with my peer group outside of school even? So
Thank you.
That's kind of where I was coming from.
Yeah, Peggy brings up a great point where you have families who have different rules for their kids when it comes to COVID, what's okay to do and what's not. And that's created a lot of challenges for parents who are trying to, like, you know, give a thumbs up or thumbs down to a play date or to explain to their kids why their friends are able to do things and they cannot. What are you hearing about that, Erin?
Oh, that is a really important issue. And actually, I've experienced some of this in my own home and family, as someone who has a pretty significant chronic lung condition, I've had to be much more careful than a lot of my children's friends, peers. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there was a time during the pandemic where, you know, we were a very small bubble, really just our family of five. And then, you know, maybe we would gradually add in one or two people. And one thing that was so helpful during that was to have another family that had similar a similar approach to the pandemic. And that created an opportunity for us to form a pod with that family. But I hear this from so many of my patients, too, because I work in healthcare and I see people with chronic complex health issues. And for so many of these patients, they're living in constant fear. And they want their kids to have a social life, but they also are really worried for their own health and well-being. And I know moms who have been hospitalized and intubated with COVID, which has been a huge challenge for their family. So I think it's really hard when you're negotiating those things. So what I would offer as a tip for parents is to get really clear on what's okay for you and your family, and also recognize you might at times be willing to expand your kind of comfort for one special thing, whereas typically you wouldn't, but to generally be clear. And for people who are in two-parent households, to have the parents really get clear with each other, because I think when different parents are giving different messages, that can create some conflict and confusion in the family as well. And then, so get clear and stick with your values on that.
And, you know, we know in a lot of households, too, you have grandparents, you know, you have multiple generations living in one home, and as well as, you know, people who may have, you know, health conditions. So that explains why different, you know, points of view, you know, will come from parents about what's okay and what's not okay for the kids to do. Brandon, what are you hearing about that?
Yeah, I think that there is a level of fear of missing out from a lot of children. But again, families have to do what they can to protect themselves. And when we do have blended households and we have various different ages, various different vaccination statuses, it can be very mm-hmm. challenging to determine what those boundaries are in the home and those expectations are. And I think that this is important for not just for parents, but also for those families with a little bit of the older youth to have more discussions and almost family meetings to figure out, you know, how do we want to operate as a unit and how do we want to make sure that we're all keeping everyone safe, but everyone still gets their needs met. I think that the caller Peggy brought up a great point about socialization and how important that is for youth of all ages. And it has taken a hit during this time. So what can parents do to establish this, what those norms are for the family where everyone's safe, is very, very important for us to talk about.
Mm. All right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation about parenting during the pandemic. We're asking our parents and caregivers of children, how are you doing? And what's going on with your child? Have you noticed changes in your child's behavior? Do you have questions for our guests? Give us a call at 651-227-6000, or you can call us at 800-242-2828. Now back to that conversation about parenting during the pandemic and what's going on with our children and teenagers and their behavior, how it's changed, what kids are dealing with, and as parents, how we help them get through this. My guests today include Brandon Jones. Brandon is a therapist and the executive director of Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health. We also have on the line Erin Erickson. Erin is a maternal child health specialist and a nurse practitioner. She also co-hosts the podcast Mom Enough. And we're taking your phone calls. If you're a parent or a caregiver, I just want to know how you're doing. What's going on with your child? What are your concerns? What questions do you have? Give us a call at 651-227-6000. Tweet me at Angela Davis MPR. Let's take a call now in Minneapolis. Anne is on the phone. Anne, thank you for waiting. And what did you want to share with us?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call and thank mm-hmm. you for this conversation. And the one thing I wanted to emphasize was the ongoing isolation and loneliness of parenting mm-hmm. in a pandemic. I have two kids who are under five, and the endless navigating of risk mitigation is on top of all of the other things that you are navigating on behalf of your kids, whether it's them jumping on the bed, screen time, chocolate, et cetera. And the delay in the Pfizer trials, I think, has impacted parents in a way that people aren't really realizing. It feels like we were at mile 24 and we've been told we have 10 more to go. A friend of mine said, I feel like giving up on life. It's mm-hmm. And one of the things that it was so striking to me is I feel like it didn't get the significant media coverage that at least my family felt, as well as other folks in our community who have kids under five. that it just seems like this is never, ever, ever going to end.
And how old are your children again, your two kids?
4 and almost 2.
So they're not able to get the vaccine. So how have you dealt with that? Have you just chosen just to stay home to protect them and to protect others?
Well, I envision, yes, they are in childcare, and I sort of envision we have like a tank of an ability, I guess, to navigate risk. And so we chose childcare, but there are then countless other things that we sort of feel like we're depleted on when it comes to figuring out how we're going to spend our time. We're mostly all outside. We are really lucky that we have like an amazing community of friends with kids, but we're choosing not to go indoors. And every choice that we make, we know has implications. And I think the bottom line of that is that parents are just so exhausted. There's just nothing left with what is the constant dialogue in your head about navigating risk, its impact on your kids, and its impact on your partnership, if you have one, and your general community of friends.
And thank you for calling. And I can hear the exhaustion in her voice. She's talking about isolation. Brandon, what can you say to Anne that would be helpful?
I would just encourage Anne to keep going. This is not easy. And thank you for bringing up that awareness and being transparent and honest. And I would encourage Anne to lean on those other parents who may be feeling the same way. It's good that Anne has that community. And for folks who do have a level, you know, have community or support from other parents, to don't be afraid to start conversations and offer support. And then also find the intentional time to do things that are either with your children or without your children as well. And just maintain your well-being to the best of your ability.
Aaron, what did you hear in Anne's Anne's story about having two kids under the age of 5?
Yeah, I think that is just such a tough thing, and for those of us who have children who are over those ages, I don't think we're as tuned in to just how hard this is, that it really does have that a feeling of never ending. I would just add that I think there's build on what Brandon said, which was such wise advice, that we really do need to take care of ourselves in this. And I think with young children, we need to continue, as one of my good friends says, to find new ways to have fun, to keep our lives interesting, because otherwise the day-to-day can start to feel kind of exhausting and maybe even a bit boring if you're stuck at home. But I loved what she said about getting outside. And I think that is something that if we have enough layers, if we have the clothes, not everybody does, of course, but if we have the clothes to be outside, that's a great way to stay connected. I also really encourage parents to do some simple things for self-care. I know a lot of parents are, at least my patients for sure, are frustrated because they've gained weight and maybe they don't feel as healthy as they've been before. They're finding it harder to be active. And to set some really low goals for yourself so you can feel the positive feelings of success with those goals. And to try things like, simple breathing exercises or meditation. And there's some really great apps like Insight Timer, which is a free app where you can do meditations. And even just taking a few minutes, you could even be in the bathroom for a few minutes. If you have a co-parent, they could watch the kids, or maybe when your kids are down for a nap, you could just take a few minutes to do some breathing or meditation, and that can really decrease the stress level.
And I heard her say that what helps, and I think what has helped me is also to plan activities so you have something to look forward to, having something on the calendar that you can look forward to, and trying to plan some activities with the kids' friends or with your own friends, that can help. Let's take another phone call in St. Paul. Sue is on the phone. And Sue, thank you for waiting. And what do you want to share with us about parenting and children?
Hi, I'm a part-time guardian or caretaker for my grandson, whose single mom works full-time, more than full-time. And we had him back in school in January because we saw that the online education was really not working for him. And that has helped a lot. But in the meantime, we've seen a whole series of socially unacceptable behaviors that put him in detention, that have gotten him in really big trouble. In early August, we started looking for a therapist, and first of all, it was pretty hard to find anybody that would even talk to us, but we finally put him on a waiting list in August, and we're still on the waiting list. So it seems like for kids that really need help now, he's 12 years old, so it's a kind of a significant time in his life, there's not much there.
Right. Sue, stay with us. I want to ask you about this, Brandon. We know that there's a shortage of mental health professionals. And so Sue's the caregiver of her 12-year-old grandson. She's been on a wait list since August.
Yeah, that's a tragedy. And Sue, I hear the frustration and I completely understand. We do not have enough professionals out here and even people who reach out to myself. What I've been encouraging parents and caregivers and grandparents to do is to find other activities that can be therapeutic. You have a 12-year-old grandson. One thing that if I was his counselor, I would be encouraging things like martial arts or something where he's engaging with his body. He's with other people. He has leadership within there. And there's discipline that's being learned. And now people don't always associate that with therapy, but it's very therapeutic because it's calming the body. It's allowing you to exercise your mind. It's allowing you to engage. And I think that those things can be helpful in, you know, as you're waiting for those therapy opportunities to open up. And it is a tough time for many people. Many of my colleagues have wait lists that are, you know, 3 or 4 months out. And it's good that people are reaching out for therapy, but we don't have enough supply to meet the demand, unfortunately.
Aaron, do you have any advice for Sue, who is looking for some help with her 12-year-old grandson?
Oh, yeah. I think Brandon really covered it. I love that he brought up that the movement and doing something physical. I mean, we know that for kids, you can do a lot just by acknowledging their experiences and holding space for how hard it is for them. I think sometimes when we're as parents struggling on our own, we kind of forget that piece of really holding space for the struggles of our children. I would really encourage this grandmother to connect with the school. A lot of schools have mental health resources on site. There may be someone who could connect with him just to check in with him at school. I think that's a great place to get connected as well.
And so, Brandon, you're the executive director of Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health. Is there more help on the way? Like, what is being done to address the shortage of mental health professionals?
Yeah, I hope there's more help in a way. I can't say that there is. It's such a difficult thing. But one thing we're doing in our organization is continuing to encourage people to get into this field. I think mm-hmm. that there's a lot of confusion on how to become a therapist or even how to do therapeutic work. What we're doing was we're working with other organizations and having conversations with people who are in undergrad and talking about just the experience of being an actual therapist and how to do this therapeutic work. And also utilizing other professions as well to kind of step in. It might not be counseling per se, but it's still something, a therapeutic engagement that's taking place. So family coaching, home community health workers, things of that nature that can engage with people, that can meet them where they're at and still give that therapeutic support, even if it isn't the classical talk therapy model.
And another resource, I know we have a talk show coming up in January about the benefits of mentoring. So I'm wondering if there are community groups that, and there are community leaders I know who are trying to provide counseling services to families, particularly children who need someone to talk with. Aaron, on your podcast recently, I know you did an episode about holiday stress, and I want to talk about that because we are going into this winter break. Kids are out of school. We've got a lot of time at home coming up. Holiday stress. And so the holidays can be, joyful, but they can also be very stressful. How are people making decisions about traveling during the holidays and family get-togethers? And what can you say, or what did you hear as you talked about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, again, it's every family's kind of doing their own thing. I know for our family, we got together with some relatives recently, and we actually did it outside. We rented a heater actually at Home Depot, and that was the only safe way we could do it because we had some differences in how we're handling the pandemic and different beliefs about vaccines and things like that. So that was one thing we did, and I think that's a great option. Again, it's all about I always said there's no bad weather. There's just never enough layers. You just have to add more layers if you have them. And I think the other thing is just to really, again, get clear on what your values are. The holidays are a time that are, so wonderful for so many people and so hard for so many people. I have countless patients who I know are spending the holidays by themselves. They don't have family. Maybe they don't feel comfortable being in a social setting. So I think it's really important for us all to be mindful of those loved ones who are maybe more isolated, or if we have someone in our neighborhood we know is alone, you know, making a phone call, sending or dropping off a card, or having your kids draw a picture for them, I think that can really make a difference. And I think, you know, if we think about the true meaning of this time, regardless of what people are celebrating, it's a time for connection. And I think a lot of that gets lost in this kind of gotta have it culture around presents. And so I think it's really important to be mindful as a family about how you can give back during this time and how you can do things for others. And it doesn't cost any money to have your kids draw a picture for someone who's alone this time of year.
And I want to get back to talking about uncertainty and how that is affecting children. We're seeing the, you know, a surge in COVID cases again. We're seeing restrictions in some cases ramp up again, events getting canceled again. And how does that uncertainty and living in uncertain times, Brandon, how does that affect a child's development?
Yeah, it can have children be very discouraged about their future. And they can start to question what's going to happen with them or what's going to happen with their parents. And, you know, even in my own home, my middle child, she was asking about death the other day. We had a very interesting conversation mm-hmm. due to hearing over the television talking about the pandemic and the death toll. So, you know, what it does for the developing child is it makes them more curious about what is happening, what is going on in the world around them. And one solution or strategy that I would like to offer for parents and caregivers is to don't be afraid to have these conversations with kids at their appropriate age level. I think offering a voice for children is very important at this time because their minds are just running wild with all types of things. And it's okay to let them express that and to give them some sort of idea of what's happening, again, based at their age level, to just help kind of calm some of that worry and some of that fear that may come about for them. And then also just encourage them to be a part of decision making within the home, I think is important as well, so that they know that they do have some control over what goes on. Because as a kid, a lot of times you feel like you don't have a lot of power, you don't have mm-hmm. a lot of control of things. And I think one way we can do that as parents is by offering them just small things like, you know, what would you like to eat today for dinner? Or what should we do as a family? Or what should we watch? Should we watch a movie? Like, just giving them the ability to have some sense of control in their world is very important.
And Erin, as the mother of three teenagers, how do you address living in very uncertain times with your teens to keep them encouraged?
Oh, boy. Well, I think the number one thing is we really prioritize time together as a family. So we're a big family meal family. So we really cherish that time to have open conversations. And really to create that space where there's no judgment, so they can really tell us anything. And I think our kids tell us a lot more because, mm-hmm. you know, even if it's something bad, you know, maybe they weren't coping well. And, you know, we hold the space for that and create those open communications. I think another thing is even with teenagers to create a little bit of consistency in the day, and especially for younger kids, in this kind of time of uncertainty, having a few things that are certain. Can really feel soothing.
Mm. Well, I've appreciated the time I've had with both of you and the phone calls from our listeners, the advice that you shared, and the opportunity to talk about not just the mental health of our children, but the mental health of parents as well. Our guest today, we've been talking with Erin Erickson, a maternal child health specialist and nurse practitioner. She's also the co-host of the podcast Mom Enough, and Brandon Jones, who is a therapist and the executive director of Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health. Today's conversation was produced by Samantha Matsumoto. Enjoy the rest of your day and know that you can check with nprnews.org as we follow the deliberations in the trial of former police officer Kimberly Potter. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.